Does working as an arts consultant with clients in a rural location differ in approach from working with clients in an urban setting? It can, yes. Rural and remote communities hold distinctive nuances that overlay a way of life to which art sector development is not immune. Knowing what these nuances are and understanding how to both embrace and navigate them offers a path for stronger, webbed, and more resilient arts communities. Hello, and welcome to the sixth episode of At the Mic, a podcast brought to you by Arts Consultants Canada, l'Association des Consultants Canadiens en Arts. In this edition of At the Mic, we bring you a conversation about consulting to help strengthen rural arts communities. Our guest, Kate Proctor, and moderator, Bridget McIntosh, will share some of their wisdom with you. Arts Consultants Canada acknowledges the support of the Canada Council for the Arts for this podcast series. Nous remercions le Conseil des Arts du Canada pour son soutien à cette série de balado. Having lived on an island on Canada's east coast and establishing her arts consultancy there, Kate Proctor bridges multiple geographies. Grounded in senior arts administration and creative industry roles, her clientele ranges from rural artist collectives, festivals and municipalities, to national and international projects involving multiple partners of diverse artistic origins. Kate leans into art sector development projects that center artists within strategic and multi-sector partnerships while cultivating collaborative and trust-based relationships. Much of this is reflected at the heart of her book, Leverage the Arts Ecosystem to Influence Local Prosperity, which was published in 2020. This book offers strategies and tactics to artists, arts administrators, and community-minded leaders, centering artistic value in programming and community building. Her current focus with PAL Ottawa engages an expansive team that is piloting a new, innovative, and affordable live-work option for senior artists and arts workers. An award-winning strategist and creative producer, Bridget McIntosh, has held senior municipal management positions with portfolios spanning arts, cultural policy, public art, and festivals. As a consultant, Bridget continues to work with municipalities and organizations across Canada and internationally, engaging, questioning, facilitating, and designing to build resilient communities, networks, and organizational models. She is a Toronto Arts Council Cultural Leadership Lab Fellow, a Next City Vanguard, and an IETM Global Connector. Her consulting practice is particularly focused on exploring the power of intersectoral collaboration and leveraging opportunities for cultural expression that becomes meaningfully integrated into everyday life and protected through public policy. Bridget and Kate are the founding co-chairs of Mass Culture's Research Working Group. And now, here are Kate Proctor and Bridget McIntosh.
So hello, and Kate, it's so wonderful to have this opportunity to chat with you about rural arts and consulting practice. And I know we've worked together for a while, so I know a bit about you in terms of how you were in Ottawa, you moved to Gatineau, and I know that you lived in Prince Edward Island, so you certainly have some experiences there. So I'm just wondering, can you maybe describe a few unique differences of working in a rural and remote community for us?
I sure can. And hello to everyone. It's a real pleasure to be here and to share some of my experience and knowledge from, as you've said, Bridget, living in a rural and remote community. I did live actually most of my life on Prince Edward Island, except for the last 7 years and a previous 3-year period to that. And growing up in a rural environment, I wasn't in the city of Charlottetown. I wasn't in a village. I was actually very rural. And there's certain nuances that come from living in a rural community to be aware of. And these contexts and nuances, they overlay both your workday and your daily living. So I'll give you a few examples of that. You really get to know your neighbors through everyday life and community activities, either as a youth or adults, of course. Now, this is similar in any rural community. It's not specific to where I'm speaking of. Another thing to be aware of is that word spreads very quickly in small communities. The grapevine, it's very active. with many truths, but also some tales. And so you want to be sure to know how to differentiate between the two, but realize that this informal communications network can also be a very helpful tool. There are also key people who are influencers in any community. This could be in different sector environments, geographic jurisdictions, or communities themselves. And their opinions matter, whether they're factual or not. So your access to people, to positions in power, is greater in a smaller community as well. You have a shorter reach to be able to be in contact with those people. And so that means fewer layers to work through. So it might be a business leader. It might be a local celebrity, a mayor, maybe even the premier. So it's good to know that you have generally easier access to those people in power. Another thing I'll note is traditions. They are generally held in very high regard, and they are observed in that same manner most often. And these traditions may be associated with heritage traditions. It may be family traditions. There's the whole gamut. But be aware that these tend to be steadfast in rural communities. And change does not happen quickly. That can tend to be something we say about change generally. But especially in a rural community, if you're moving outside of what I've stated previously as the traditional scope of thinking or activities, change does not come necessarily swiftly. And the last thing I'll mention is authenticity. It is everywhere in rural communities. And this changes from community to community, even in a small province like Prince Edward Island. It tends to be evident in the culture of the community and what residents value. And that may be tied to, again, family histories, the riches of that community or their community assets, where it's located geographically. Is there a mining sector that's heavily influences the area? Farming, fishing activities, dinosaur fossil sites, artistic clusters, you know, you can go on and on. And then, of course, the types of businesses that support and stems from these economies and sectors is also very relevant.
Okay, that's such a great overview and just really detailing what's so unique. But along with like being unique, I'm also curious about those elements of the rural community that are similar to those of an urban arts sector. So just wondering, have you found through your work that there are things that are similar in both a rural and an urban environment in the arts sector?
Absolutely. And what rises to the top of my list with the priority in this context is working with artists. Artists are always passionate about their work and their role in society. And I find it doesn't matter where artists are located. I really enjoy working with artists, and I find that they each bring their own authenticity to whatever it is that they bring to their career, to their professional sphere of their discipline. Another similarity is challenges in securing funding. You need the resources, of course, to apply for the funding. And in many arts organizations, capacity can be limited. But if you have, whether rural or urban, if you have knowledge of the available funding and you know the administrative process, that is open to everyone. So that's a similarity for everyone. The impact of digital. This, again, we've seen it clearly through the pandemic, but how we work and network online, it has been demonstrated to be more equal and greater access over extended geographies are now possible. And so that creates an opportunity to work for everyone on more of an equal bandwidth. Now, of course, the difference in that is a reliable broadband network. So there's many rural and remote areas of Canada that just do not have that reliable network. So that is certainly a disadvantage. But if you do have that network, it should be similar for most people. Another area is supply and demand. Now, this is as related to available work for sector consultants, and I'll touch on this a little bit more later. I won't go into that now. And another huge similarity is tourism. Its tie to the arts is known and evidenced in many different locales. It's such an economic generator that all communities get involved, whether urban or rural. The difference, once again, is how a destination is promoted based on their community assets and what is unique to that location. So whether you're looking at a macro level of somewhere like a Nunavut, it holds much different offerings for visitors than, say, Nova Scotia, without considering the micro levels of the individual communities and the fact of one being a province and one being a territory. So but tourism is again, an equalizer in rural and remote areas.
Excellent. And Kate, I know just through our collaboration, I've had the privilege of hearing all about some of the experiences and the work that you've done in rural and remote communities. So I'm just curious for our listeners, if you can talk a bit about the types of projects where you've acted as a consultant within a rural and remote community, just to give a sense of the diversity and like the sense of the different types of projects that you've worked on.
Absolutely. A big one for me is strategic planning. That was really where I started my consulting career. And I've done different types of strategic plans. For example, for a provincial music association, I did a multi-year plan. For a municipality, it was an arts and culture plan. And for an artisan cooperative, that plan involved more extensive research outside of Prince Edward Island, which took me to another rural area in Newfoundland as part of my research. But that artisan cooperative was wanting to expand. So say they all had very unique asks within their project. I've also done communications planning and development. And in that context, it was profile building for the client. It might have included sales or community partnerships. And you might think, well, how does communications planning have to do with community partnerships? But it can be very much entrenched if you can dovetail supporters within your communications. It can make quite a difference in your end results. Also, I've done projects with governance, and that might have included organizational policies, terms of reference, the board composition. I've worked with a contemporary artist cooperative, and that was more supporting their business operations. I facilitated arts events, and that has included multiple partners, whether there was artists or municipal staff, architects, and business community. I've also facilitated discussions and meetings at conferences and roundtables. And I've presented my research findings at academic conference, at regional gatherings for performing arts, and that was through a provincial rural network. So you get to share the information of what the projects are that you've worked on or the research that you've tapped into. And of course, grant writing. That's one that many consultants are familiar with. And that could be grant writing for an individual artist or for an arts service organization. So there's lots to draw from.
Amazing. Yeah, definitely a wide variety of different projects. And you know, for our arts consultants colleagues, whether established or someone new looking to work in this sector, I'm curious to hear, based on your experience that you've shared with us, what are things that could help either an established consultant or, you know, a prospective consultant who wants to work in these rural communities? What would help them with this line of work?
Certainly. And as you say, based on my experience, I find it's really important to get involved as a volunteer in the arts sector organizations, particularly at the planning level. And this might include sitting on boards of arts service organizations, perhaps being involved at that level at an arts council, at theaters, festivals, artist collectives, a writers group, etc. Depending what is available and what's in your community, seek those out, because you get to know and work with the artists directly, as well as the community influencers, as well as arts administrators, municipal and provincial government staff, politicians, philanthropists, and other like-minded residents. So you're getting to know who and be part of who the decision makers are for whatever the entity is that you're volunteering for. You also become well informed of what's happening either in the sector or within that particular organization. And then you can assist with planning initiatives by offering your knowledge to support its success. Now, I put a cautionary note here that certainly be helpful, but remember, you are a consultant that gets paid for your knowledge and your expertise. So it's a fine line and might be a little challenging, but it's certainly worth the effort to put yourself out there as a volunteer. And the other thing is to learn who the influencers are. I've mentioned and referred to this previously. And in this context, I'm talking about learning who aligns with your core values and who has influence in areas that you want to influence through your work. So get to know these people, find ways to work together, even if just having conversation, that's a starting point. And realize it is most beneficial to have numerous champions of your work and your knowledge within your network when you need to call on them. So all of this comes to building trusting and collegial relationships at every turn. And these are non-transactional encounters that it will take time to develop, but be curious. Explore the interests and the knowledge of your colleagues. It's not just you saying what you want, it's you investing time and knowledge in their interests.
And I hear through all of that, you're speaking a lot about the importance of having a robust network and the relational aspect of working with people. Can you talk a bit more about why this is so important to a consultancy business that's based in a rural community or working in a rural community, Kate?
Absolutely. It's a bit of a fishbowl when you're living in a rural community. And so your credibility is built upon your reputation. Your people are seeing what you've done, your previous work as your calling card, along with your personality. And now, this is not exclusive to rural communities. However, the word does get around very quickly, as I've mentioned. So within a small geography, there may be many eyes on you and your work. And if you are easy to work with, and if you live up to what you purport as your expertise, and if you have satisfied clients, you, of course, will be more favorable or sought out for potential consulting projects. Similar to credibility is word of mouth. It is critical to your success. The grapevine that I mentioned will have the occasional naysayer, but if your reputation is good, it will not be tarnished by negative opinions of you or your work. And in small communities where everyone knows each other, there might only be 1 degree or less of separation. So you just want to be aware of that as well.
And Kate, earlier you spoke about the diversity of projects that could be available within a rural or remote community. And in general, arts sector consultants, they could be hired to work on a large variety of projects. You mentioned building a long-term strategic plan, facilitating town halls, deep diving into a specific research topic. So my question is, when you're working in a rural environment, how do you determine what your area of expertise are? And I'm saying this because I wonder how broad your experience must be to sustain an arts consultancy business in rural communities.
A great question, Bridget. Let me break this down into 3 sections: location, knowledge, and competition. As it might be assumed, within location, with a smaller population, there are often fewer opportunities to work in a specialized area. Speaking within the arts and sector consulting area, it depends on the size of the community and the assets that that community offers. However, consider this. In February 2023, Hill Strategies reported that Canada has over 8,000 non-for-profit arts, heritage, and entertainment organizations located across the country. 28% of these organizations are in rural areas, yet 16% of Canada's population lives in these same rural areas. Also, a high proportion of these rural organizations are located in the 4 Atlantic provinces, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, and Prince Edward Island, as well as Saskatchewan and Manitoba. Now, Ontario and BC, they are the most urban jurisdictions, so they have fewer of these organizations in rural communities. So, with this data in mind, 28% of the organizations are located amongst 16% of the population. One might expect that there is greater opportunity to work in this field in rural communities. I'm not saying one way or the other if this is true, but it's an interesting observation. So it really does depend on the community itself and if the type of arts and cultural sector development opportunities within that community match your skill set. So moving on to knowledge, it's always beneficial to have more knowledge, both for you and your clients. You come to the project with a broader skill set, of course. Now, how you gain this knowledge depends on your career path. The more diverse your career, the more complex project work, and the years of research you bring, the broader your scope of knowledge and the toolbox you can utilize. If your career path and the outcomes of your work reflect this, you hold greater capacity to launch and sustain a consulting practice. You are continually building on this knowledge to then support a wide variety of projects spanning numerous arts disciplines, different types of organizations, development plans, governance structures, and more. And lastly, competition. In a rural community, and with a number of arts consultants practicing in that same community, the tougher the competition will be to secure the work, like in any business. However, if you have a personal connection through your personal and business networks, as I noted earlier, you may have an inside track to pitch for upcoming projects. The volunteer and participation components are hugely important to stay in the know. And don't hesitate to pitch project ideas to potential clients, ones that link to or directly impact arts sector development. Not everyone thinks of that, that you're not, you don't need to only be in the waiting and receipt of potential projects. If you see something that might be valuable or worthwhile to a community and you have the know the people to investigate that further, go forward with that.
So Kate, you mentioned something interesting with competition. I want to dig into that a little bit more. Now with COVID hopefully behind us, we've really gotten used to having those digital and video platforms such as Zoom be commonplace in our practice. So with that, do you feel that the window of opportunity decreases for art sector consultants who are living in rural communities now that external consultants can use Zoom, can serve clients using those methods? And I'm just comparing the local presence of arts consultants who are based in rural and remote communities to external arts sector consultants who are interested in that same line of work. Can you talk a bit more about that competition and that dynamic?
Absolutely. And it's a great question. It really depends on a whole number of factors. For example, what is the level of expertise that's required for a specific project? So that's very criteria focused and has to relate to you, the skills that the consultant offers. What is the client weighing heavily in their request for a proposal? So that means what elements do they put a lot of attention on that is important for this particular project? And another question is, does an external consultant or perhaps a firm have more experience than you? If yes, in any of these cases, then you may not win the contract. But on the other hand, if the project requires in-depth knowledge of a local network where someone external just wouldn't have that knowledge, and the associated stakeholders require this as important in who they give the project to, then an external consultant is probably not a threat. Your local network and the broad knowledge might favor a client choosing a local arts consultant in that case. Now, this is not to say, and as you've mentioned, Bridget, that the external consultants won't travel. They have Zoom, of course, but they can certainly travel for a project as well. There's also the consideration that a consultant must think about that a client might prefer working with someone who does not have ties to the community. And that could be for a whole host of reasons. So the opportunity for a consultant located in a rural area, you also want to look beyond. Reverse this, look beyond your local community to see that that's also an option. So it goes both ways, both inward to and outward from rural and remote communities, meaning that if your network and volunteer participation at the provincial or national level is important to give you a leg up into that external outside of your local area, then you should be considering that and being involved in that again, perhaps as a volunteer, as I mentioned previously. And if you can combine that with your expertise, you will probably be able to secure some work outside your local rural location. So it's not a complete disadvantage. Again, you can flip the coin, so it can go either way.
And when you talk about external consultants, Kate, I'm thinking about the opportunity for change. So given that when someone from outside the community comes in with a different lens and no or little to no connection to the rural community, that external consultant, they bring their own lens of experience and knowledge, but it's completely unrelated to anyone or anything in the community. Do you think that whether a rural client works with that local or external consultant, do you think that there is a stronger resistance to change in a rural community if they end up working with an external consultant who is completely, in many ways, disconnected versus someone locally?
It's a really great question again, and it depends on, again, what the client is looking for and what they hope to achieve really through this, because they would be aware of this potential resistance as well. So it depends on the client's vision and realizing that consultants are hired to facilitate a pathway for their client. It is their role to present robust evidence of a feasible path that clearly shows why this suggested path meets their client's objectives. So a consultant presents recommendations for their client to accept and buy into, and the ripple impact of that would go to other stakeholders within the community who also would need to buy into recommended change in order to move the needle in whatever direction they hope to go. So bringing this to the rural community, generally many and their local funders in the rural communities tie arts sector development to economic development. And this is the dollars they expect to be generated in return for whatever the initiative is. So this is a tangible form of development that many funders seek, but there is much more that can be considered over and above return on investment. So when a client has a strong focus on economic benefits, a new path or approach that you as a consultant recommend may butt up against financial risks, or if you're suggesting moving away from traditions of that community, or perhaps you're suggesting challenging local expectations from the audience. In all of these cases, the willingness for change can get sidetracked. And I suggest this because sometimes clients will say they want change. They will put this clearly in their RFP. But when it comes down to going through the project and the recommendations the consultant offers, they will actually resist some of those recommendations. So be aware that it's not necessarily you or your work. It's just that overall resistance to change. And it really doesn't matter necessarily if it's from an external consultant or a local consultant. This is just a challenge.
So Kate, I have the million-dollar question here. Given all of these challenges of change that you've just went through, how can the rural arts sector consultants move the needle forward on sector development?
The easiest way that I have come across to help in this is to take a risk on change. And that means to mitigate the risk. So no single organization or person wants to waste time or money on any initiative that might not work. Hesitancy may be tied to that level of financial investment or potential community pushback or board level or management level resistance for that matter. So how do we, as in your question, as consultants work through this? So I offer up three factors to consider. The more partners that are involved, whether they're contributing some form of money, time or resources, the lesser the risk to all partners should it fail. So basically, the risk is spread among more people. With a broader interest in a particular initiative, should it be successful, there is less opportunity for the initiative to be discontinued. Again, because all stakeholders in this case are now benefiting. And thirdly, the longer this partnership endures, the harder it will be for any one member to withdraw, as the roots of this project deepen over time, becoming embedded in the community with local activators and benefactors. So this premise is called Building Webbed Communities through Arts and Culture Based on Local Community Assets. And this means it's authentic to the local community, meaning it's not easily replicated. So the webbed community development model can be applied to different types of projects and across multiple sectors. So if you think multidisciplinary, various forms of the arts, within this model, with partners from non-arts sectors, you might think of health, agriculture, transportation, tourism, and more. Now, contrary to this model, think of a single entity, maybe a national corporation, establishing a new store in a rural community. At some point, someone in another province or country, perhaps, decides to pull the company out of this rural community with limited, if any, consideration to its impact on that community. Within the webbed community model, local partners are not as likely to disband, even when challenges appear, because they support each other to achieve some total success. So this type of model also attracts local audiences as they're supporting their friends, their neighbors, and their colleagues with an overall pride in place. And I find that this webbed community model is especially powerful in rural communities. Many people are there and they're willing and ready to step up, and they have only to be invited.
Amazing, Kate. So what do you feel your role as an arts consultant is?
I feel it is my job as an arts sector consultant to facilitate pathways. I want to elevate and celebrate arts sector development. And my personal focus in my consulting practice is to leverage opportunities for artists so that they themselves are elevated and celebrated for their work. So whether I'm working with an arts organization or a non-arts sector group, I'm very mindful of incorporating holistic planning or implementation opportunities that ultimately tie to, and more importantly, need artist inclusion for successful arts sector impact and development.
Wonderful, Kate. Thank you so much for sharing such incredible insights and your experience working with rural and remote communities. And you've done actually a lot of writing about the arts ecosystem and how we can leverage the arts and support the arts. So this is a fantastic segue just to share with people listening to this chat that you have authored an incredible book called Leverage the Arts Ecosystem to Influence Local Prosperity. It's a fantastic read. I highly recommend it for any arts consultant who is working whether rural or in urban environments. And you can find that at proctorshiftconsulting.com. And also, just to close, in addition to this chat, I know that Arts Consultants Canada has had a series of really great At the Mic sessions. And so thanks to our friends at the ACCA, and just encourage others listening to this to also check out those conversations as well at artsconsultants.ca. Thanks so much, Kate.
Thanks so much, Bridget. It's been fun.
And that wraps up our sixth edition of At the Mic, a podcast of Arts Consultants Canada. For information on Arts Consultants Canada and our members, please check us out online at artsconsultants.ca. To send us feedback or questions on anything you hear in this podcast series, please email us at podcast@artsconsultants.ca. And remember to check out our show notes in this podcast for links mentioned during the program. Et notez bien que quelques épisodes sont en français et nous offrons accès à un service de traduction de ne rien manquer. Thank you so much for joining us on At the Mic. Remember to subscribe to this podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Until next time, and again, thanks for listening. À la prochaine!